We are going to attempt to finish lesson three today. Attempt, I emphasize that, okay? Lesson four worksheets are over on the podium there. You can pick one up after class this morning if you haven't already gotten one. And we will attempt to start that next week. Anyway, we've kind of laid a foundation, so to speak, on this, on the topic of evangelism, of reaching out and sharing the gospel with other people. There are some key ingredients here that we've been focusing on and talking about in this whole thing. Just by way of real quick review, what are our two main keys here that we see with Jesus and following his example? What was it that Jesus had? Anybody recall? First, he had compassion, but he also had a vision. Okay, he had a vision for the lost. Okay, how did he see people in the world? Not from a worldly perspective, but from a spiritual perspective. He saw that men were lost, and he came to seek and to save the lost. And he had a compulsion to save the lost. God created mankind in his image, and because of man's sin condition, man needed to be saved, and God was compelled to provide a way for mankind to be saved, for to save his creation. And so that's what has driven him, you see. It wasn't a matter of that God would just go, well, I gave them a chance, you know, I created them in my image and they blew it, they're on their own. He was compelled to save his creation. And so we find that driving force behind God in his in the work that he did so that men could be saved, culminating in the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus. And then what we're really looking for is to find that same kind of force within his people today to continue that work. We've been looking at the first century church as the church began on the day of Pentecost, and that's where we are right now, and looking at what were some of the things that they did. They shared that vision, and they felt that compulsion and the compassion for mankind to be able to go out and to share the gospel with everyone that they had opportunity to do that with. And that's what we're looking at right now, is what are the things they were doing that made them so successful, you see, in spreading the gospel, to where we saw last week we were looking at the numbers of people that were being saved. On the day of Pentecost, what did we see? 3,000 people were baptized that day. And then we looked at several different passages where it just kept telling us that the Lord was adding to their number, those who were being saved. And the number grew to about 5,000 men. And there was even a large number of priests who obeyed the gospel. And so the gospel was spreading. And it's because the Christians in that particular time, they shared that vision and they shared that compulsion and compassion for the lost. So, In this part of our study, we're looking at the top of the inside page here. This question here, at the very top of the page, in our religious discussions, what do we usually talk about? I want to take out for just a minute religious there. Okay? All right? In our discussions we have with people, what do we usually talk about? Movies, okay, yeah, that's a popular topic, isn't it? Okay, have you seen the latest and greatest movie that's out? Okay, what else do we typically talk about? I'm sorry, the kids, okay, weather, football, yeah, any kind of sports. Do what? Oh, the Steelers. I don't know why anybody would want to talk about them, but anyway. What else? What other kind of things do we talk about? Food. You know, okay. Work. Stuff. Yeah, my stuff. Here's my stuff. What stuff do you have? We certainly like to talk about our stuff, don't we? We like to compare our stuff with one another to see if we got the latest and greatest stuff and, you know, so forth. What else do we talk about? think we really talk about that a lot? Sometimes, okay. Well, see, that's part of my point is for us to really look at and see how much of our conversations that we have with people, see, is about religious things versus how much of it is about football and, you know, movies and work and the kids and, you know, our stuff. Okay. Keith?
We're in the middle of a conversation at work now with some of the phone guys. Sometimes those conversations go over with.
Sometimes they don't.
And you really have to be careful when you talk about those things so that what you're trying to talk about is not the question that another side shows.
Well, then it oftentimes becomes counterproductive.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. If you're talking about your kids, usually, you know, you got all the pictures out, right? And you're talking about your kids. How excited are your grandkids, whatever? How excited are you about that? You know, I mean, you know, that's why I got pictures of my grandkids on my door, because, you know, people ask me about, I'm proud of my grandkids. I want to talk about my grandkids, you know. We like to talk about those things that are exciting to us, right? I mean, just get a couple of guys together who won't typically talk about anything, you know, to one another. They can be perfect strangers, but throw in a football or basketball or baseball topic, and off they go, and they're talking, and they're just all excited, defending their Steelers or, you know, Redskins or Packers or whoever it is. You know, we're going to, and we can get real passionate about that because we get excited, don't we? You see? You know, talk about our jobs. You know, usually when we're talking about our jobs, we get passionate about that because we're complaining about our boss, right? But we get things that we're excited about. We typically don't have a whole lot of problem talking about them, do we, with other people? We want to share those things with people. So why don't we talk about Christ more than we do?
I think one of the maybe common reasons, I guess you could say, number one, you may feel like somebody asks a question that you can't answer.
Right.
You don't feel like you're talking about God if you don't know what you're talking about.
Right.
And another thing that's online is...
But people, I understand that, but let me just interrupt you and I'll let you get going. People talk about football, they don't know anything about what they're talking about there either, but we don't have a problem doing that, you know, or baseball or a lot of other topics. We don't know what we're talking about, but we still don't have a problem talking about it, you see. Go ahead.
Would that do you trying, when you're talking about God, you're trying to convince someone
okay.
to see your way attacking,
okay.
which, like you said, too, with football, but you don't necessarily care because it's like, well, you already... sticking your chest out, so to speak,
right.
and saying, I already know you wrong, I don't care about you being wrong,
right.
and this conversation is going along, you can keep your way of thinking, I don't care, you know, I'm trying
right.
to convince you a little bit, but I don't care if you don't understand, because it's me here, and, you know,
okay.
my team is number one, and that's it. But with God, it's... You
and you're stupid, by the way, right?
Right. No. But with God, you want to try to convince them of your way of thinking,
okay.
and you don't want to feel like you are wrong. You
would lead them the wrong way.
Right.
Okay.
You're trying to save a soul here. You're trying to do something to help them. You don't want to cause a confusion
okay.
With that. And of course, with what he's answering the second reading is, along those lines, each person is, you know, if you get into a conversation with somebody else and they, especially if they are in the church and it's different than yours, then you're going to, once you...
It's just like teams, isn't it? You know,
yeah,
which one is better?
View,
yeah.
Then it's going to end up to a a bad situation where you may come to the point where not even speaking at all and lose friendship altogether.
Right.
So you know, you don't want to really, in that aspect, rather than to cause the problem, you rather let it slide. That's my opinion of it.
Okay. All right. Steve?
Well, something that came to mind, when you talk about sports and stuff, there's a well-known radio commentator who says sports is the one thing you can invest a huge amount of passion in, and it doesn't cost you anything.
Right.
Okay. We all know deep down in our, you know, our innermost being that religion is a serious subject. You know, you don't get a flip of freebie, okay, when you're talking to people about Christ. One of the things, too, is I think we, you know, and it ties in exactly with what Wes said, we're afraid of saying the wrong thing. You know, sometimes I think we want to be able to talk Bible more than we want to be able to talk Jesus. And those are not necessarily...
Well, and that's where we're going with this, too.
They're not the same thing, okay?
Yeah.
And Satan whispers in the back of our head, you know, it's like, okay, you're going to talk to this person about religion. Well, what was it you screamed at the top of your lungs when you hit your thumb with a hammer the other day? Okay.
Right.
You can't do this. You know, you're not adequate. Well, who are we dependent on for adequacy?
And see,
I don't want to steal your thunder.
No, but that, that takes us back to this question as it's originally written. See, you know, in our religious discussions, what do we usually talk about? Okay, so let me hear from Brian here, and then we're going to go and talk about that part of it. Brian? Is there a difference between a fan and a fanatic? What's the difference?
I would like to say,
Jerry's a fan of the Redskins as long as they're winning. But he's not a fanatic, is that it? Like Wes and Beverly when they dress up in their green and they, you know, do y'all have cheese hats, by the way? I didn't mean to ask you this. Do y'all have the cheese hats?
You
don't have them yet. You notice he said yet. Okay.
Matthew has one for us.
Matthew has one. Okay. Would you describe Wes and Beverly as fanatics when it comes to the Green Bay Packers? You say, you know, they are really into it. And here's the thing. Here's the reason I bring that up. You see. We recognize there's a difference, isn't there? A fan is someone who, yeah, I like this, you know, I'm interested in it, what have you. A fanatic is someone who is very supportive, you know, that's a major part of, you know, their energy expenditure and all that kind of thing, right? Do we have a lot of folks who are fans of Jesus? Instead of being fanatics? It's easy to be a fan, isn't it? You know, when everything's going well, you know, when my team is winning, I'm a fan. You know, we sometimes refer to folks as fair weather fans. You know, when the team's doing well, you know, we're rooting for them. When they're not, you know, well, you know, but to be a fanatic, you know, then it doesn't matter whether they're winning or losing, that's my team. You know. And about anything. It doesn't matter whether the weather's good or bad. If I'm a fishing fanatic, I'm going to be out fishing. It doesn't matter. You see, on whatever the topic is. But I just wonder, do we have that kind of a problem where we have a lot of people who are there? We have a lot more fans of Christianity and of Christ than we do fanatics. Okay? And I see the first century Christians, as we're reading about them here, I would categorize these folks as being fanatics. Okay? They're not just fans of Jesus. They're fanatics. They're following, they're pursuing, they're sharing him with other people. What caused them to be that way? What kind of atmosphere existed that enabled them to be that way? See? And helped that whole situation to progress the way that it did in that early time. Look at part number 4 here. Their membership was united. Acts chapter 2 and verse 44. All the believers were together as they studied the word. They cared for each other. They remembered the cross and they prayed for the lost. Okay? They had, it says, everything in common. They were all together. They had everything in common. Okay? What are some of the things that they did when they were together that it lists here in this particular part here? Okay, they prayed together. What else did they do? They broke bread together. I'm sorry? Okay, all right. What else did they do? Cared for each other. And they praised God together, didn't they? I mean, just look at the statements in this text. Verse 45, selling their possessions and goods, they gave to anyone as he had need. So they took care of one another. Every day they continued to meet together in the temple courts. They broke bread in their homes. They ate together with glad and sincere hearts. I think that's an important part of it. They didn't just eat together, okay? But they did it with glad and sincere hearts, okay? Don't miss that part of it, okay? And praising God and enjoying the favor of all the people. Praising God was an important part of what they were doing when they were together. See? So you look at all of those kinds of things that were happening. In other words, the way I see it is an atmosphere that is being created. Okay? There are, you know, if you think about growing plants, you know, you're going to go out and you're going to grow a garden, okay, whether it's vegetables or flowers or whatever. There are certain conditions that are conducive to growth, aren't there? And then there are conditions that are not conducive to growth. See? And so if you've got the right conditions, you know, in terms of the proper soil, you know, with the right pH and all that stuff, you've got the proper amount of water and sunlight and all those things that makes those, it's conducive to the growth of those plants, and they're going to grow, especially if you put Miracle-Gro on them, right? They're going to grow, you know, all that much more. But if your conditions are not conducive to growth, you go and think of the parable that Jesus told of the sower that sows the seeds and it falls on different kinds of ground, right? And so there he's talking about that there are some kinds of soil that are more conducive to growth than others. And so think about this in terms of an atmosphere, okay, that is conducive to growth that they were creating in the first century church. They had an atmosphere that just, you know, it just said grow, you see. It made things grow because of that atmosphere they were creating. Brian?
I love how you put together how they created
that. Yeah.
Talk about the first century church, and we have that class in Revelation, and we talk about what was going on during the first century. Mm-hmm. And it all comes down to this. They bonded together. And it's like the
Absolutely. And that's one of the things that I was going to bring up is this idea that, you know, we can't look at the government today and the situation that we have in our environment, and the elders, we were all discussing that this morning in our meeting here. You know, we can't look at the environment that we have today in this country and use that as an excuse for that and say, well, you know, it's just not conducive to growth. We do not need a favorable government, you say, towards Christianity in order for the church to grow, in order for us to do what we should be doing. You say, now, if we had that, it'd be great. You say, that's just icing on the cake. In a sense, but I'm kind of afraid if you go back and you look at history, when the government's favorable to Christianity, then that seems to make people who are Christians kind of, you know, lazy and, you know, saying, well, you know, hey, everything's good. We don't need to worry about it. And we've kind of let the ball drop. So perhaps maybe looking at it this way, that one of the conditions or things that make the conditions favorable for growth is opposition to the teaching of Christ. Have you ever thought about it that way? See, we look at the opposition and go, oh, we can't, you know, I'm going to lose my job, I'm going to lose my friends, I'm going to this, and, you know, it's just not safe to go out and talk about Jesus. Well, we haven't been thrown to the lions yet, not here. You know, there are people that are losing jobs or, you know, and things of that nature, but, you know, nobody's eaten them yet, you know. But is that kind of thing more conducive to real growth?
There's evidence historically to suggest that during periods of persecution, that's when the church grows.
Absolutely. Yeah. All you have to do is go back and look through the Old Testament, the period of the Judges. When the Israelites were being persecuted, what did they do? They turned to God, you see. That's when they called upon God. And so when everything was going well for them, what did they do? They turned away from God and, you know, forgot all about Him, you see. I have oftentimes used the term that perhaps maybe the persecution is used by God to thin out the herds. You see, that there are an awful lot of people, and I've said this many times, you know, the research keeps coming back the same, you know, roughly around 85% of people in America claim to be Christians. How can that be possible when we have so much going on in America and the way our society is? See? That there are a lot of people who are claiming to be Christians, see, but they're not living it, see, because there's no threat to Christianity. See? But start looking at the way things are today, and people are being threatened with Christianity, and there are those who aren't standing up anymore because of those threats. Okay, see?
This passage in Acts, you know, too. I've thought about that a lot over the years at different times. And one of the things that I wonder about is, you know, the first sentence there, you know, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching, to the fellowship, and to prayer. You know, they didn't really have the written word that we do.
Right.
They had the Old Testament scriptures. Do you think that a lot of time was spent by these folks, being that they were, you know, Jewish to start with, comparing Christ and what the apostles had to say about him in his life to the prophecies?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that was a big piece of it, was prophecy fulfillment.
Absolutely. I think a lot of their teaching was done that.
And how would that work for us today? And to try to create that same atmosphere through the teaching, what should our emphasis be? You know, when we're, you know, not to be exclusive, but, you know, when we're studying.
Well, I don't think it's as much in terms of all the prophecies themselves, but one thing that I try to emphasize with folks when I'm teaching with them is to go back and look at the history of things and the way that God worked His plan. From, you know, you look at the promise to Abraham, and you know, there's some key events that take place there that help people connect the dots, so to speak, to make them understand, to help them to understand. You know, this is where I fit into this picture here. You know, God made a promise to Abraham that included what? Through you, all nations. Well, that includes you. You see, you're part of all nations, right? And the whole Passover thing, what was that all about? You see, the firstborn son. And God, you know, saved those people by what? By the blood of the Lamb, you see? But it required their obedience to him, to do what he told them to do. And that was all part of God's plan. And, of course, that is a shadow of the sacrifice of Christ, the perfect lamb for our sins. And so you try to help people. I try to help them connect the dots in those. A lot of the prophecies are lost on people today, you know, simply because even religious circles, they're lost because, you know, we don't have that history of the Jews, so to speak, as our heritage, you see. So anyway, that's an approach that I typically take with. I try to help people to see, where do you fit into this picture here? It does include you. Okay? All right? Another aspect of this that helped them in creating this atmosphere that we're talking about here is their number five on here. Their master was God. Okay, Acts chapter 5 and verse 29. Peter is speaking here, and what does he say to them? As they're, the Sanhedrin is telling them, stop teaching in the name of this man and so forth. And what is his response? Yeah. You judge for yourself whether it's right for us to obey God or man. As for we cannot stop teaching and preaching in his name. We have no choice but to obey God. Okay? They recognized who God was in relation to them. He's their master. This is a side note, okay? You don't have to pay anything extra for this morning. I'll give you this freebie. The next three Sunday mornings worship lessons, we're going to be talking about joy, and I'll talk more about that, you know, in our lesson form where we're going with all this. We started this last week. When we finish that, our lessons that we're going to be looking at the first few weeks of December are going to be focusing on the Lordship of Jesus, which is this very thing right here. See, how important is it for us to understand, you know, that God really is our master. Okay? And so we look at that part of it, that they understood that. You know, we don't have a choice but to obey God, was their approach. Okay? And yet today, I've heard, you know, many, many, many times in talking with people, I know what the Bible says, but, well, then God is not your master, okay? All right? Peggy, you look like you're ready just to burst there, okay?
I don't think we understand it either.
Okay?
And I think now everybody's hung up in their life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And obedience goes out the window.
Yeah. We want God to obey us, don't we? You know, we've kind of twisted that around, and God's just supposed to obey what we want Him to.
And it goes down, you know, the man's law, that God has to obey man's law, it goes down to, and He stresses it, and you see it all through the Old Testament, as well as the New, but I mean, how, again, when they didn't obey, they paid the price. When they didn't obey, they paid the price. And He just wants them to get it, because they didn't.
Exactly.
Right.
And not only that, but what does He tell us? If you love Me, you will do what? Keep My commands, you see? So when we're not obeying Him, we're making a statement about our love for Him.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's at least two ways to see it. Okay? There's God's ways and our ways, okay? You know, and so everybody sees it different in that they're seeing it their way instead of God's way. If everybody would look at it God's way, then you're right. There's not but one way. You see, but you're right. That's exactly how people look at it. That's your interpretation and so on and so forth. And my, as I talk with people, and I hear the same thing with people a lot of times, you know, my thing is interpretation has nothing to do with it. What does it say? You know, what does it say right there? It's very simple, you see. There's no need for interpretation. Just read what it says, you see. Yeah. That's right. Okay. So, look in this second part here, on this down there at the very bottom here. Make a short list of people or things that opposed the disciples. What kind of opposition did they run into back then? Okay. And their biggest opposition was from the religious leaders of the Jews, wasn't it? I mean, you know, if you go through and you read the history of that time, not only from the Bible but other things, you know, the Romans, as far as the government of the Romans, you know, being interested in what, you know, Christianity was all about at the beginning of it, they really didn't care. This was a matter for the Jews to deal with. You know, it was an uprising amongst the Jews. You know, let them take care of it. They didn't want to get involved in it, you see. So early on, it really wasn't that much of a matter of that the Roman government was opposing. It was mostly from the Jewish religious leaders that there was a lot of opposition, you see. The Jews just used the Romans to carry out their plan of crucifying Jesus, which, by the way, was God's plan, right? Okay. All right, make sure we understand that. They had that kind of opposition from religious leaders. Think they ever ran into any opposition from friends, neighbors? You know, what kind of opposition did Jesus run into besides being crucified, by the way? Yeah, his own family. Many of his disciples quit following because the teachings that he was giving were too difficult for them to accept. Okay. So should we think that things are going to be any different for us today? You know, you said, Cindy, you know, same things today, right? That's what they face. That's what we're going to face. Look at this thing at the very bottom here. I must obey God rather than men. The man that is against me, my enemy. The man that is beside me, my friend. The man that is within me, myself. Okay, what's that really saying here? I must obey God rather than men. And are these typically the places that we encounter the most opposition? From our enemies, from our friends, and from ourselves. Okay? But we have to remind ourselves constantly that we've got to obey God rather than men. Okay? And then on the back sheet, on the back side here, their method was simple. Okay? Go back to chapter 5 and verse 42. Day after day in the temple courts and from house to house, they never stopped teaching and proclaiming the good news that Jesus is the Christ. Okay, what kind of places did they teach in?
Every place.
House to house. They did it in their homes, in jail, did it on their jobs, you know, wherever they went. They were teaching and proclaiming the good news about Jesus. Look at this question there in the middle. What are some of the programs of this congregation that can help me become involved in filling this city with the gospel? And I remember one of the things that we've been encouraging you to do is we're using the term from the beginning of this lesson, my Jerusalem. Okay? Think about your Jerusalem. What are some of the things that this congregation can help you to do in order to spread the gospel in your Jerusalem? Okay. And, you know, we have not really had any kind of a formal evangelism program here. It's basically been just where we're trying to share the gospel with those, you know, that we have opportunity and so forth. That's getting ready to change. That's part of the reason why we're doing all of this, is to place more and more of an emphasis on outreach, on evangelism. And one of the things that we have mentioned, we talked about this in our men's meeting last week, and we've mentioned it a couple of different settings and so forth, but just to encourage people and be thinking about this, one of the areas that the elders see as probably one of our best atmosphere that we can create is to encourage you, that is the members, as many as possible, to open up your homes to have home Bible studies. You know, with your you know, those people on your list that we did from week number one, you see, you know, to open up your home and invite these people to come to your house and have a Bible study, and we'll be glad to come and conduct a Bible study in your home with whoever you can invite and get there. You see, that's one of the areas that we think is going to be the most effective for us to do. And so I want to encourage you to think about those kinds of opportunities for you to just pick a day of the week or whatever and think about the people that you know in your life, those folks on your list, and plan to have a Bible study in your home. And we've got a lot of people here that can do those Bible studies, and the elders certainly, we would like to be able to come and have Bible studies in people's homes. So think about that, okay, in terms of that particular opportunity. All right? You've got your list from week one. Okay, look down here at the very bottom under Experience It. Are you praying for those people? Okay. One of the things that we've been focusing on, of course, is prayer, and the emphasis that we had a few weeks ago in talking about praying for opportunities for evangelism. You see, for God to open doors for us and so forth, and give us the wisdom that we need to be able to talk to people and so forth. So be praying about that. Think about the people that you have on your prayer list or on your list of the folks that are not saved that you want to try to reach out to and save them, and pray. First of all, pray for them. That's probably the most important thing and best thing you can do for them, is pray for them. Okay? And then, as possible, the next step on here is try to set up a meeting with them. Okay? Begin to meet regularly with some other people. And pray. This one on here is meet, you know, with something we've been doing is praying together, but get a couple of folks together and pray about the folks on your lists. You see? Or at the very least, share your list with somebody else and ask them to be praying for those folks on your list. Okay? Lifting up those folks in prayer to the Lord. And then we need to be trying to reach out to folks, get to know people. There's a suggestion down here about to get out and meet everybody in your block, make a list of their names, addresses, children, basically information, pray for them, and then begin to invite them to Bible classes, whether it's our Bible classes here at the church or, again, a Bible study in your home. If you would like to do one of those, just let one of the elders know, hey, I'm trying to set one up in my house, and we will be glad to make that happen. All right? Okay. I got 2 minutes. Finished with this lesson. Comments, thoughts, input. Whatever. Anybody? Okay, pick up a lesson number four sheet over here on the podium, and we will begin lesson four next week. That's your homework assignment. Thank you all very much.
Thank you.